Well, hey everybody, welcome to MEC. How many of you have ever walked through a cemetery? On almost every gravestone, I don't know if you've ever gone through it kind of with historical things in mind, and obviously when you go there for an actual funeral, it's a very somber thing, but a lot of people walk through cemeteries, they find them peaceful, they also go there on historical kind of quests, and if you go through that and you start just reading gravestones, it can be really interesting. On almost every gravestone, there's a name and often a saying like devoted mother, loving father, a Bible verse. There are websites devoted to funny things on gravestones, just more bizarre stuff that people did on gravestones. And because I have a very morbid, warped sense of humor, I'm going to inflict a few on you. On George W. Jr.'s grave was, I knew this would happen. Now this one, I found funny. Ellen Shannon's read, fatally burned by the explosion of a lamp filled with R.E. Danforth's non-explosive burning fluid. Okay, that says more about me than you. Okay. P.P. Roberts said, I told you I was sick. Lester Madden's went with a Jaws theme. We're going to need a bigger casket. And then there's no name on this one from Chattanooga, but it said, I came here without being consulted and I left without my consent. And here's one you got to love. Here lies an atheist all dressed up and no place to go. Here's my favorite. Some guy named Mitchell. On his tomb, he just said, well, this sucks. But there's something else on gravestones. Dates. The year they were born and the year they died. Usually written something like 1951-2011 or 1973-1990. Now, with all the stuff that can be on a marker, what is it that matters the most? I mean, if you're just reading them, what is it that really is the most significant? Is it the name? Is it the saying? It's the dash. It's the dash. The years they actually lived. And most importantly, what they did with those years. Because you never know when the dash is going to come around and when it's going to end. I once read a book that challenged you to think along these lines. It says, think about what you would do differently if you had 1 month to live. What would you change? How would things be different? How would you relate to people? How would you make each day count? How would you spend those 30 days? I mean, who, if you knew you had 1 month to live, would say, oh my gosh, I'd work more? You wouldn't do that, would you? You wouldn't say, I would go on that diet. No, you'd eat everything you'd get your hands on. You wouldn't say, I'd binge on Netflix or try to catch up on that. No, I think most of us would have, at or near the top of our list, one overarching priority. I would spend as much time with my family as I could. Just every second I could. Now, why would we say that? It's because we know that in the end, time with those we love is one of the most important life investments we will ever make, for them as well as for ourselves. Which obviously begs the question, what is keeping us from living that way now? I mean, really prioritizing family time. I know we all say, well, you know, someday, I'm going to do better at that. But see, that's what we've got to go to war against, this someday mindset. Someday I'll get around to that. Someday when I'm less busy. Someday when I quit working. Someday when I get out of school. Someday when the kids get out of school. Someday when I retire. When are we going to realize this is our life? I mean, it's happening right now, right here. Our life is today. This whole someday, one day, when, if, tomorrow, it's really all an illusion. What life are we waiting for? I mean, this is it. And that's what the Bible wants us to realize. Take a look at how this is talked about in the Psalms. It says, teach us to number our days and recognize how few they are and help us to spend them as we should. And these words from Ecclesiastes, it's better to spend your time at funerals than at festivals. You're going to die and you should think about it while there is still time. A wise person thinks much about death. And from Ephesians this, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. We're in a series on doing family. And today we're going to talk about doing time as a family. We all know that time is an absolutely critical ingredient to any functional family, but too often we don't live like it or we don't think about it the way we should. We act as if we have all the time in the world to one day spend with our families, and we don't. So let's talk about how do you really do time and family and do it now? And there's two big headlines that scripture would point us to that we've already alluded to and we're going to keep talking about. And the two big headlines, it's really simple when it comes to doing time with family. You need to find time and you need to fill time. Find the time and then fill the time. Let's talk about both. First, let's talk about finding time for your family. It wasn't that long ago, or at least it didn't feel that long ago, that Susan and I thought that we were in the most frenzied, taxing, demanding, overloaded season of our life. We were in the diaper changing, car seat loading, pacifier finding, high chair feeding, what were we thinking when we wanted kids stage of life. We had a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a newborn. We had at least one kid in diapers needing primary round-the-clock watchdog care for about an 8-year run. By the time we got the kids out of diapers, I had to start wearing Depends. We dreamed of when they would be able to walk and talk and play on their own so that we would be able to slow things down and ease up and get some rest. Why didn't somebody slap me then? What do you mean you can't wait till they can walk so you can get some rest? Do you have any idea what's coming? This is preseason. This is the calm before the storm. Annihilation is coming. Before we knew it hit us, we entered into the van, driving, soccer playing, cell phone ringing, school activity attending, mall shopping, friends coming by, prom dress buying. I wish they were back in diapers stage. Now we're empty nest. Not. 9 grandkids just means 9 requests for babysitters every week. I can't get rid of snot-nosed kids. No matter what stage of family life you're in, when it comes to the pace and fullness of life, it's a no-win. But that's just the craziness on the home front. There's also like your job and there's your marriage. And sometimes it seems like it's all you can do to pull off the individual schedules of everyone in the family, much less find time to actually be together as a family. So where do you begin? Well, you know, as I look back over 30 plus years of doing family with my family, with Susan and I and our kids, I've learned some things about this. And a lot of it the hard way, because I don't know about you, in terms of your family of origin, I didn't have hardly anything modeled for me, like less than nothing. So a lot of this, it was like, I had to like be mentored myself, schooled myself, go to school on the scriptures and learn by a lot of mistakes. So let me, if I can, share a little bit of that kind of with you. And I know the first thing that I needed to settle within my own self was this whole quality versus quantity time argument. That whole debate of quality versus quantity, or is it both? I mean, you got to settle that one, and then you got to make that your target on the wall. Now, those who argue for quality time say that it doesn't matter how much time you spend with your family. What matters is the quality of that time, the depth of it, the intimacy of it. They argue it is of little value to spend hours and hours in superficial interaction. And that would be seemingly true, wouldn't it? The real issue is what you do with that time, not how much of it you actually spend. And this is so appealing to those of us who are super busy. In fact, if you buy into this, it can relieve an enormous amount of guilt over the lack of actual time spent with your family. And there's a lot of truth to this. You can spend hours and hours with someone and not have it add up to very much. There's no doubt that what you do with your time as a family is crucial. Now, the quantity folks say not so fast. It's the amount of time that you spend with your family that matters, and here's why. Let's say you go into a restaurant, you look over the menu, you order the most expensive steak in the house. When the waiter brings you your meal, you see this tiny piece of meat about 1 inch square in the middle of your plate. And you look up and you say, I ordered your best steak. What is this? And he says, sir, I recognize that the portion is small, but that's the finest corn-fed beef money can buy. You'll never find a better bite of meat than we served you tonight. As to the size, well, you know, you understand, it's not the quantity that matters, it's just the quality. Quantity this, right? You know, quantity matters. And the Bible agrees. In the Bible, we read these words, God sets the lonely in families. In other words, families should provide the day-in, day-out companionship, the raw time needed to feel joined and in community with other people. Families are supposed to be the antidote to loneliness. That's not the only reason why quantity time matters. The quality time that we all know is significant only comes as a result of quantity time. It's the raw quantity of time that produces it. It's the hours and hours invested in a relationship that might give you that unlooked for, unexpected, but hoped for 20-minute conversation with someone that breeds intimacy or forges a value or even alters a destiny. You just don't look over your schedule, find 23 minutes on a Thursday afternoon, pick your kid up from school and say, okay, I got 23 minutes. Let's go deep. Share your fears. Share your failures. Hurry up. Now we're only down to 22 because quality time goes fast. That's not the way it works. You don't get a break in your day and call your wife and say, honey, my 3 o'clock ended early. I've got 15 minutes before my next appointment. So I thought I'd call and ask about your self-esteem issues. I actually tried that. It just doesn't work. What is the answer to the great debate? Is it quality time or is it quantity time? And we all know the answer. Yes! It's both. It's not an either or. Families are built on quality time, but quality time is created in direct proportion to the quantity of time that you spend. So if you're going to tackle this thing called time and family, you've got to address both issues. You've got to have both as the target on the wall. So how do you do it? How do you find the quantity of time needed for a high degree of quality time to operate in a family? The answer that I came to on this was not fun for me. The answer of how you find that time is the same way you find time for anything else. You know what's one of the most healthy, painful truths you'll ever come to admit about yourself? You have no trouble finding time to do what you want to do. Let me say that again. None of us have any trouble finding the time to do what we want to do. The reason that's so painful is because it cuts through all of our rhetoric and all of our excuses and all of our circumstances, but it's true. We all find time to do what we really want to do. Doesn't matter what it is. Round of golf, binge watching something on Netflix, watching the game on TV, taking on an extra project at work, going out with some friends, scrolling through Instagram. We find the time to do what it is that we want to do. So, to find time for your family, you've got to want time for your family. Now, some of you are saying, but I do, I still don't have the time. I used to say the same thing. But I realized I was not being truthful with myself. The truth was that I was simply choosing to spend that time in other ways. I'll tell you when the gun went off on this for me, and it's not a fun story for me to share. It was when I was in my late 20s, you know, a couple years ago. And my life was on a fast climbing track of busyness. I had a job that I had allowed to regularly fill at least 50 or 60 hours a week. I had started some writing on the side. I was getting some invitations to travel and speak. I was finishing up my PhD. And then over here, oh yeah, it was my family. I had a wife who also was working at the time, a young daughter, Rebecca, 19 months later, a second daughter, Rachel. I gave them what I felt I could, but that was it, what I felt I could. And I actually felt that what I was giving them was ample. My youngest daughter, though, bore the brunt of this new stage of frantic activity in my life. She never knew anything but. She was born into me in full active mode. And I can't remember exactly when it started, but around 2, there was just a time when Rachel would get hurt and she wouldn't want to come to me. I would come home and I would reach to pick her up at the end of the day, and she would cry and reach for her mother or her babysitter. She just became emotionally detached from me. And for a moment, just a moment, I started to respond by becoming emotionally detached from her, to just shut off, to look the other way, to let my heart get small and resent her lack of affection. Fine, you want to be that way? Fine, go to your mother, fine. But I couldn't do it. Instead, I became overwhelmed with a sense of grief and fear, to be honest with you. I had wanted a wife and children my whole life. And here I was dropping the ball. I was too busy, I was too absent, I was too distant, and it was flushing itself out already in that precious two-year-old little girl. And I started to wonder, if that's what's happening when she's two, what's going to happen when she's five? And dear God, what is it going to be like when she's 15? I didn't know what to do about it. I felt trapped by my life circumstances. I mean, wasn't I doing what I was supposed to do? I mean, wasn't I working hard? Isn't that what I'm supposed to do, is work hard? Wasn't I providing for my family? But then my breakthrough came. I just had this moment where I realized I am in control of my life. I really am. I didn't have to write. I didn't have to say yes to speak somewhere. Nobody was making me work like a maniac. Whatever ladder I was climbing was my ladder. No one was making me climb it. The truth was that I had a faulty set of values. Like a lot of people, I would tell people, you know that trivial kind of trite phrase, oh, how do you prioritize your life? Well, it's God first, and it's, you know, family second, and it's work third. And what a bunch of crap. That was not at all my priority. It sounded great, but I wasn't following that. It was work first. And even more, I had allowed what I did to define who I was. And then as I read in the Bible, it's like things began to just jump off the page at me. And I remember there was one passage in particular that when I read it, it was like God took it like a baseball bat and just hit me with it. So let me see if it hits you the same way it hit me. This is from the 127th Psalm. It is senseless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, fearing you will starve to death. Children are a gift from the Lord. I don't know if it strikes you at all that the Bible joins those two dynamics together, work and family, and how if you're not careful, one will go to war against the other, and it's the family that always loses. It was as if God was saying to me, oh, it was so stupid for you to give yourself over to your work and your career, fearing that nothing else will define you adequately. When you have children, you've got family as a gift to invest in and enjoy for the rest of your life. I began to realize I could find the time for my family if I wanted to. I was disciplined in regard to time in every other area of my life. In fact, I would have put my time discipline up against anybody's. You know, when I got up, when I went to sleep, and when I did this, when I did that. Why couldn't I be disciplined with the time I gave my family? So I literally began to schedule time for my family. I would just take blocks in my calendar, just put in family. And I put these rules in my life. For example, every night, if humanly possible, every night, I would be home for dinner. And then the rest of the evening, free to focus on those kids. Every week, an entire day, I set aside totally devoted to the family. I got really creative. You can use this. I called it Family Day. And I vowed to do nothing on that day except to be with my family. And when someone or something tried to encroach upon that day, I had a standard reply. I always said the same thing. You know, I'm sorry, I can't. I've got a commitment. I've already got a commitment. And I did. My family. Susan and I, as many of you know, ended up having four children, and I followed those time disciplines for the entire run. I still do it. And we have family day, and we still have kids showing up for it. Only now they're married, and they bring their kids along. I think it's because they know that whatever we'll do, I'll pay for, and they're cheap. I mean, they show up at the door. They got like four or five kids. Hey, Dad, family day. Slam. leave the grandkids, you go. I remember one time I was asked at a pastor's conference I was speaking at, and they had a Q&A thing following, and this guy said, this is a serious question. He said, so, like, don't you feel like because you followed some of those family rules that maybe your church isn't as big as it could have been? And I remember I said something to the effect of, I have no doubt Mech would be twice the size it is now if I had violated those rules. And thank God I didn't. I said, I would have been half the pastor. The church would have been half the quality of church it is. I said, are you kidding me? I wouldn't do anything different. That two-year-old little girl, Rachel, my sunshine, it's my name for her, my sunshine. I was just thinking as I was writing this this week, I don't think there's a day that goes by, hardly, that we don't either talk on the phone, FaceTime, or text every day. I can't begin to tell you how dear she is to me, how close we are. All my four of my kids, but I mean the one that I almost lost, is just dearer than dear. Are you choosing family over other things? I once heard Jim Collins, who I think is one of the best business life management thinkers around. If you've read any of his books, like Good to Great, Built to Last, I mean, I remember I was at a seminar he was teaching at live, and somebody was asking him about the number of books that he reads and the family time and the disciplines and stuff that he has for his marriage. And they said, so how do you do that with your schedule and all the stuff that you're doing? And he said something that I thought was so profound. He says, you know, we're as a culture, we're so good at making to-do lists. What we really need to do is start making some stop doing lists. Because what wars against what we most need to do in life is everything else that we're doing. And we just need to go through and make some stop doing lists and maybe take out some stuff and maybe put family in. But finding time isn't enough. You got to know how to fill it. This is important because one of the great temptations of our day, and I'm seeing it higher now than maybe any other time in my lifetime, and that is where people are confusing activity with community. I want you to hang with me here. Confusing activity with community. Let me tell you what I mean. You want to spend time with your family, maybe your son. So you sign your son up for soccer. You write down the practices and the games and when that will be, and you make the commitment to be there like a good parent, excited about how you're going to spend that time with your son. You're not spending time with your son. You take him to practice and you drop him off. You go to the games and you sit on the bleachers. He interacts with his teammates and his coaches more than he does with you. You'll have the ride over there and the ride back, but if you carpool, you don't even have that, and that's it. See, that would be confusing activity with building community. And what you're after with your family is community and intimacy and relational depth and closeness. Think what would have happened if you had taken that same time sitting in the bleachers and actually spent it with your son. Now, hear me. This has nothing to do with whether or not you should play soccer. It's not anti-soccer or anti-any sport. It has to do with the role and place of activities. They can be good and wonderful things, but don't ever confuse them with the kind of time that is needed to build intimate family relationships, because they're not designed for that. When I was a boy, I played a lot of sports, and I played a lot, particularly organized baseball and basketball. And my dad never went to a single Little League game I ever played. And I don't remember him ever being at a basketball game. But if you had told me that my dad was going to show up at a game where I was starting, you know, from my basketball team for high school, what that would have meant to me, I would have told you I would have rather had a walk together, a fishing trip, a camping trip. I would have rather played basketball with him in the driveway and given up every sport in the world. Any of that would have been better than sitting in the stands. Why? It would have been relational. I might have had a relationship with my dad. You see, here's why I'm hammering on this. I am seeing more and more families destroyed by a life of activity that is just running them into the ground, leaving them so busy they can't even see straight. And you know why they do it? This is a bitter irony. They think that activity is what will make them close. But it won't. It's just making it harder for you to find the time to do what it does take to bring you together. Which leads me to another defining moment that took place in my life. The first one was about making the time. The second one was about filling it. I remember that after I'd made this decision about doing family time and really scheduling that and everything and no excuses going to be allowed, I remember Susan and I would plan out a family day. And we would fill it with all kinds of activities and involvements and things like gymnastics and Little League and all that stuff. And we'd come home and eat and maybe watch a video. And we'd be together. We'd have been together all day, doing event after event, activity after activity, chasing involvement after involvement. And at the end of it, we would feel so empty, like we just missed the moment. We wouldn't feel any closer to our kids, much less to each other. So, we had technically spent time the whole day as a family, but it didn't seem to be doing anything in terms of building our family. And I would get so discouraged because I was making these enormous sacrifices to have that time set aside to be together. And I thought to myself, if this is what it's going to be like, the heck with it. It's not worth it. And then it hit me. What was I trying to have this time together do? Well, I was trying to have it draw us closer together as a family. And so then it was like this little voice inside my head said, well, then idiot, do things that do that. And I just began to think in a whole new way about our family days. I began to think about things that would allow us to not just be together, not just have fun, but to actually interact when we were together and have fun, to talk, to relate to each other, to grow in intimacy, to get to know one another better. So we started like grilling out more and cooking more and playing in the yard and doing projects together and reading books out loud and popping popcorn and just looking at family videos and stopping and storytelling while we did that, playing board games, and particularly the kind of board games that have you laughing and talking and getting to know one another better as you play. I bought camping equipment rented it actually in the early years, didn't have the money to buy it. And I remember I'd rent or borrow camping equipment. We'd go camping and fishing and hiking and stargazing and biking. I remember one fall, I was so into this, I didn't want to waste a single one. I planned out 10 straight weeks of family days in advance. And I remember things like, okay, hike Crowder's Mountain, go to the pumpkin patch for our Halloween pumpkins, go to Latta Plantation for this thing, overnight camping outside of Blowing Rock, and on it went. Just things that threw us together and gave us stuff to talk about and to get to know one another better. And when I think of just even those 10 days over those 10 weeks, and how it was just one small part of 50 days over 50 weeks that year, and then 50 weeks a year for what was, while the kids were in the house, nearly a 30-year run. Yeah, we're close. Yeah. We're very close. Because we spent time. A lot of time. You know, one other thing that I felt prompted to kind of mention here at the end, and it kind of touches on both finding and filling time, it's the importance of one-on-one time between you as a parent with your child. You know, when I kicked this series off, I talked about the importance of husbands and wives being the foundation of the family, and you protect that time between you and your spouse. And a lot of couples really get that. They are so disciplined about weekly date nights or monthly date nights. But when's the last time you dated your kid? What about one-on-one time with your kids? I mean, dads, if you're not dating your daughter, what is she even going to know what to expect or what she should expect? You know, what she should hold a standard for. Take your daughter out. Open the door for her. Pull the chair back for her. Treat her like the princess she is so that she knows exactly how a man should treat her. Date your daughter. Go on a camping trip with your son. Moms, have your sons take you out on dates. Say, would you take me out? I love the fact that both of my sons still take my wife out on dates. I love that. And I still kind of do stuff with my daughters as well and granddaughters. Just that one-on-one time, you know, grab your daughter up, mom, and say, hey, how about you and I just go get a pedicure? Just talk and catch up. Just with that one child. I started this early on with my kids, and I wove it into our family days. On every family day, we would have this big family breakfast to start it off with, and I would always cook it. And not only did I cook it, but every week I would have a different one of my kids helping me. They would be that particular family day helper for dad. And so they would be able to like design the menu. Oh, dear Lord. They would design the menu. And we'd go out the night before to the grocery store, get the kind of ingredients that we needed to cook it the next day. Then we'd get up the next day early before everybody else, and we'd cook it together, and we'd set the table together. And as they got older, they wanted to start theming the breakfast, so we would theme the breakfast together and set the atmosphere. The kids still talk about it. They still talk about those family day breakfasts and how singled out and felt special they were. The NBA All-Star game this weekend reminds me about how in the early years of the Hornets, I had some friends that kind of all went in on some season tickets, and they were up in the nosebleed section, the highest you could get. So they're like, I don't know, $5 seats back then or something. And I remember that was I had a certain number of tickets every year, and I would take a different kid to a Hornets game. And back when they were so little, they couldn't even keep the flip seat down because they didn't have enough weight. And they didn't know anything about the basketball game. They just loved the refreshment, people. And when we'd have to leave at halftime, which is personally frustrating for me, but that's when bedtime and all that kind of stuff, so we'd listen to it on the way home on the radio. The kids still talk about that. Just that one-on-one time. And then I would take each one of them individually with me on trips whenever I could. A lot of you travel, and I've talked to a lot of men. It's like this has never even entered their mind. Hey, all it is an extra plane ticket. I know that's money, but, you know, Susan and I didn't have a lot of money early on, but we were so committed on spending what we had on the family that this made sense to us. So for years, almost every time I was asked to speak somewhere or when I traveled somewhere, I had one of the kids with me. Years, just different one each time. And what that did for our relationship was priceless. And I still take trips with my kids as much as their spouses will let me. You know, hey, you want to go to this? I'm going to go to this. You want to come? And it's just we've been doing that for over 30 years. So it's not just family time. It's the importance of that one-on-one time. Friends, this matters so much. Every morning, the Time Bank opens up an account in your name, and a little over 86,000 seconds are deposited for you to manage. And managing that time is so crucial because, unlike money, there's no continuing balances, there's no overdrafts, there's no opportunities for you to save for the future. You've got today's deposit. That's it. If you don't use it well, it's a total loss. You can't get it back. And to raise the stakes even higher, there's never a guarantee that there's going to be a deposit tomorrow. This may be it. And few things matter more than spending it on your family. I know you'll get discouraged. I did. You get discouraged. You'll have days and seasons when you don't think it matters, where you don't think that they care. But it does matter, and they do care. I'll never forget reading about a father who kept a diary. In one of his entries, he wrote of a day he spent fishing with his son. And he described the day as a total loss. He wrote that his son seemed bored and preoccupied, that no matter how hard he tried to pull him into the conversation, the son said very little. He even wrote in his diary that he probably wouldn't take his son fishing again. I mean, why bother? Years later, a historian found that father's diary. The son had grown up to be a relatively well-known man, and just for interest, the historian thought he would compare that day's entry of the father with the son's entry because the boy kept a diary too during that same time. And the historian was amazed at what he read. On that day, the son wrote that it had been a perfect day. He wrote how wonderful it had been to spend a whole day all alone with his father. He wrote about how much it meant to him and how important it was that his father had taken the time to go fishing with him. And his father thought it had all been a waste. It wasn't. Time never is. Well, let's stand for a quick closing prayer. Father, I just want to thank you that, like a lot of people, I didn't have a lot of this modeled for me, but that's no excuse for any of us. We can learn. We can dig into your scriptures. We can be mentored. We can seize the day, and we can spend the time that we need with our family. And so I pray, Father, that in whatever way that this particular installment in Doing Family needed to challenge, that it did. We would receive the challenge well, without defense, and just make a vow to find that time and fill it. I pray that for everyone here in the name of Jesus. Amen.